welcome to another specialist podcast. We're doing these podcasts to meet and speak with people from across the care group to find out more about our services and to share their experience of working within the group. I'm Howard King, I'm Managing Director of the Care Group, and I'm here today with Kieran Doxey. Rather than me introduce you, Kieran, do you want to tell us a little bit about your role within the care group and I suppose give us an overview of what your typical working week is like?
Hi, Howard. Thanks very much for inviting me along to do this. I suppose my role is I'm the Head of Quality and Governance for Inclusion. Inclusion provides substance abuse services, IAP services, input to prisons around mental health and substance misuse, and also sexual health services. We work in a number of areas across the country from the Isle of Wight up to Yorkshire. I suppose if I'm looking at my role around governance, there's loads of ways of describing quality and governance. For me, it's about ensuring services are safe, informed and effective. And by that, I mean safe. It's about looking at how we manage risk. It's about making sure we've processes in there that allow us to audit what we're doing and provide accountability. And it's about supporting the standardization across services, standard operating procedures and such like. So services need to be safe. They need to be well informed. So I'm looking at how we keep our staff well informed. And that's more than just training. It's about seeing, it's about learning. You know, how do our staff learn about what they do? How do they learn about service user? How do we learn about best practice? And there's different ways of doing that. I suppose it's also about well-informed service users and carers, for them to understand what we do, but also what our expectations of them are. But they also hear from them about how they have experienced our services and how we could do things better. I suppose the other part of being informed is about being part of a well-informed system. So it's taken our role as part of local systems really important, and building relationships with commissioners, with other providers within the area. You know, depending on the nature of our services, it's a bit links with local hospitals, mental health services, CCGs, Public Health England, NHSE. You know, so we do need to be part of a wider system. We don't just work on isolations. And finally, we need to be effective. We need to make sure that we're working to the best practice guidance, whether that's NICE or whether that there's other elements of guidance coming through. And we, to be effective, we also need to review and learn from incidents that happen, whether they're serious incidents, mortality reviews. We need to have a process for learning and making better. And also to be effective, we need to review our outcome data. We need to understand what we do, why we do it, and how effective that is, and constantly be looking at can we change things to improve things. So in some ways, that's what my role is. It is about there's elements to that. I work as part in inclusion, I work as part of a quality team. So there's a team of us who work together to look at the quality and governance agenda. I also work as part of the senior management team, but I'm also linked into systems across the trust. I'll link in with Carolyn Gavin, who's clinical care director for specialist services, and attend the specialist service governance meeting. So there is that flow of information from our service level governance meetings up through our inclusion wide governance meeting up to specialist care group and trust governance meetings. So has that just been part of your question, or is there another part of your first question, Howard?
Well, the other part was just about your typical working week.
I suppose it's one of the things I really enjoy about the role that I do is that it's quite a variety of things. this week, for example, we have a lot of our monthly meetings this week. So we have our senior management team meeting. We also have our inclusion-wide quality governance meeting. Caroline has her care group governance meeting. So there's some structured meetings that happen both on a weekly and monthly basis. I'm very linked into our local quality team, and that we have a quality huddle on a weekly basis where we look at all our agenda and progress against them. I do the same around our senior management team. This week, for example, we're doing a lot of quality standard assurance visits across our prisons. So I'm involved in supporting quality standards assurance visits. You know, stuff that's happening on a regular basis is review of incidents. So I need to sign off all incident reports that go through inclusion. So that's for all our SMS services, IAP service, sexual health services, and prison services. So we do need to review and learn from SIs. I also support new developments, tenders, you know, ensuring that there is a quality and governance agenda built into them. Within inclusion, we're trying to develop services by, we use a model called Project and Program Board, where we set very clear initiatives. We support them initiatives with a very clear agenda, and then we work towards the goals that are set within that. So I support a number of our project board things. Now they deal with anything around rolling out a new psychosocial intervention model for our SMS services. We did some work around responding to thoughts of suicide amongst our service users, and part of that came from incident reviews, when particularly in SMS services, suicide is one of the big factors in relation to serious incidents within our services. So we do need to look at what we do as a service, both around assessing, asking the right questions, looking at the support that we can give to service users who are feeling vulnerable, making sure our staff have the right training and support. We've just rolled out a whole training program across all our SMS services around managing suicidal thoughts. I suppose within that, there's a lot of stuff around staff development, and we are looking at supporting a training manual, which goes out to all staff. Another, you know, regular part is service user involvement, and making sure that we review the feedback we get, both through things such as CAR Opinion, but also local patient feedback systems, and that becomes part of ongoing service development.
Thank you. We've just passed the anniversary of the pandemic, and I'm sure you found working in this way different to how you'd experienced it before. So could you tell us a little bit about those challenges and what you've had to do personally to adapt?
I suppose for me, it was, as with a lot of people, it was that transition from meeting face-to-face on a regular basis with occasional phone calls to moving to an online model of engaging with people, and that was a very quick learning process for the likes of myself. We had to build up the right structures and processes, ensure that we were able to build in the meetings that we needed to do to ensure that we were able to deliver against what our priorities were. So for me, it was that transition to doing most of my work on Microsoft Teams. And there's been lots of positives around that. I certainly reduced my travel. And I'm someone, because we had services up and down the country, who would spend a lot of time going out to services, meeting people within services, reviewing practice. And we would often go into services to do some of our, you know, we would have to go into our services to do quality standards assurance visits, but we would also do some of the review and training, some of the reviewing of incidents. We would want to go in and observe and learn in situ. And clearly that's had to change. So that movement from being engaged in seeing staff and talking to staff on a face-to-face basis to trying to work and achieve all the things that we need to do and doing that more remotely has been one of the big factors. But as I say, from my perspective, I think there's been huge benefits to that. It has allowed more flexibility. Me personally, I'm doing a lot less traveling. I suppose if somebody said to me, do you feel you have been as effective? I probably think generally, probably yes. It has facilitated that, but there is gaps. You know, at the moment we are doing a range of quality standards assurance visits across all our services. And I think they are weakened by the fact that we can't walk around services, observe what people say that they're doing, speak to service users, speak to staff. And we look at ways around that. We try and have panels which are done online. We try and, for example, when we were doing a review of one of the services, somebody walked around with their, you know, laptop camera on, showing us different things. But it's that ability to be able to ask questions informally, but also to connect in with individual staff members. And I think it's really important for people to see that visibility at a senior level. And I think that's been one of the weaknesses over the past year, is that people have potentially felt quite isolated, and there's a potential that they may have felt less supported than they would have done if they had have seen people coming through on a regular basis. But I do think that as things start to open up again, that'll be one of the, there'll be lots of things that we want to hold on to. But I do think, you know, that in regard to using the likes of Microsoft Teams, but there'll be other things that we will need to get out and connect them with people and understand what's going on for them and such like.
You sort of touched on my next question there, which was what are the changes do you think have been positive that you'd like to move forward with? But could you also talk a little bit about some of the biggest challenges you see in relation to your role over the next 12 months?
I suppose if I answered that across, I think it's different for the different services that we operate, Howard. I think, for example, with our psychological therapy services, our IAP services, I think with an almost instant move from the majority being telephone assessments and then face-to-face therapy to telephone assessments and online therapy using the likes of One Consult, so that it was very much video interventions. I think that has proved to be a huge success. Our data suggests that it hasn't impacted on outcomes, and that in some ways the outcomes are as good, if not slightly better. But I'm conscious that there's probably some individuals who that doesn't work for brilliantly and would prefer not to do that. And I suppose one of the things we need to take away from this is around increased choice and flexibility. And, you know, we do, I think what has happened over the past year will allow us to say to people, you have a number of options for how you receive your services, and there will be increased flexibility. But certainly from an IAP perspective, I think there's been positive elements there. Within our substance misuse services, I think, again, there has been huge challenges, and we had to make huge changes in relation to our prescribing practices. You know, we would have seen people face-to-face prior to giving them a prescription, and we were moving a lot more to looking at how we safely monitor people while not able to see them face-to-face. We were looking at, you know, body systems to ensure service users get additional support to access medication, you know, doing a lot more stuff online around service users getting access to training in regard to naloxone, the supply of medication, whether that's through pharmacy or again, whether we have buddies, we would do stuff again online around safe stories of medicines, but there was challenges around needle exchange. But we've done lots of work in the quality team around developing a prescribing scenario guidance where we regularly review that on a weekly basis. Initially is, if people present with these things, this is what our options and this is how we can do that. But certainly the use of telephone, video contacts for psychosocial interventions, harm reduction, and medical reviews, have become a standard in what we do. We need to look at how we maintain elements of that. There was a big piece of work around development and rollout of online groups for service users. And again, a lot of service users have found them a lot more accessible, easy to get to. It doesn't mean that they have to get up. And for some people, going into the hub and connecting with other people was really important for their well-being. For other people, it was probably better for them not to be connecting them with some of the people that they may see out and about. So it is about that, trying to ensure that going forward that that choice remains open and that flexibility is there. I think there's a real challenge around how we supported our service users. And we do work with some very vulnerable services within our substance misuse services. And things that we did initially was we wanted to make sure that we remained in contact with everyone. So for some people who maybe didn't have resources or led more difficult lifestyles, we did things like supporting them by giving them phones so that we could remain in contact with them. So our recovery workers could have regular contact with them. And for some of our service users, that was a real lifeline to them. We continue to use volunteers to support service provision. Our service user group continued to meet. But it's also things like we understand that for people using our online groups, for example, some people really struggled with a safe space to do groups. Some people struggled with having data on their phones or data on their computers. So we've done some work around supporting people with dongles and the such like to ensure that they can get access to ongoing support. And also within our SMS services, it was the stuff around linking them with partner agencies who were all in some way struggling with transitioning to different ways of working. And we just had to maintain them contacts. Within that, I think there's an issue also around staff support. And we had to look, because for a lot of our staff, it did require huge changes in how they worked. And, with team meetings and MDT meetings going virtually, we were having a weekly complex case meeting so that any complex cases could be reviewed with our medical lead and some of our senior staff. We tried to do a lot of stuff around health and well-being, communications, but a lot of supervision remained in place, although that would be virtual. So I think there was real challenges for SMS service. I think one of the areas where probably was one of the most difficult for staff working in was in prisons. And I think there was different expectations from commissioners of services. There were different expectations from our lead provider in a number of circumstances, and there would often be a prison by prison different expectations. So some areas would expect people not to come in and to work from home and to do stuff in to do stuff by in-cell telephony or workbooking model or whatever. But other areas would want people in sitting at desks ready to go and see people. And I think our prison staff found some of the mixed messaging that they got. And I don't think there was always a great deal of intent to make things difficult for people, but it was just professionals taking slightly different positions, but things around PPE became a big issue in prisons. Should people wear masks? Should they not wear masks? When should they wear masks? Should they wear them in the wing? Should they wear them in offices? And that was constantly changing. And sometimes the trust would have a position which would be at odds with what the prison position would be, which was at odds with what our lead provider position would be, which led to some real difficult conversations for our staff. And I think we're beginning to work through some of that at the moment. We have been working through some of that, but I think prisons have been a particularly difficult environment. And obviously within our sexual health services, they work very hard around what can they continue to deliver. And, they were looking at issues around that, their view was the only face-to-face sexual health care that could take place initially was around if there was life-threatening stuff, life-shortening stuff, issues that caused unbearable symptoms or present a significant public health risk, or where there's no alternative to face-to-face. So certain conditions where we still needed to see people to support them, and that's where there was lots of conversations around how to do that safely. And again, there was huge conversations around PPE and supply off and what should be used and standards. So there was a lot of issues around the mechanisms for us to continue to deliver services. But I do think there's been lots of learning from that. And, as we move into restoration planning, the learning of over the past year or so is being shaped and steered to ensure that what comes out of the year is better services, better services for the clients we work with, but also that allow our staff to deliver them in a more effective way.
Thank you very much, Kieran, for talking to us about your role today. And I hope you all enjoy the podcast.